We're continuing to read from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 9, Chapter 15, Parasurama, the Lord's War Incarnation, and we're up to text 27 without any purports. And there's a lot of story here, so we'll keep on reading the story. Text 27, translation. Thereafter, Kartavir Arjuna, having left with the Kamadhenu, Parasurama returned to the ashram. And Parasuram, the youngest son of Janmadagni, heard about Kartavir Arjuna's nefarious deed. He became angry as a trampled snake. Taking up his fierce chopper, his shield, his bow, and a quiver of arrows, Lord Parasuram, exceedingly angry, chased Kartavir Arjuna just as a lion chases an elephant. As King Kartavir Arjuna entered his capital, Mahishmati Puri, he saw Lord Parasuram, the best of the Bhrigu dynasty, coming after him, holding a chopper, shield, bow and arrows. Lord Parasuram was covered with a black deerskin, and his matted locks of hair appeared like sunshine. Upon seeing Parasuram, Kartavir Arjuna immediately feared him and sent many elephants, chariots, horses, and infantry soldiers equipped with clubs, swords, arrows, ristis, shatagnis, shaktis, and many similar weapons to fight against him. Kartavir Arjuna sent 17 full Akshahinis of soldiers to check Parasuram. But Lord Parasuram alone killed all of them. Let's find out how many he killed. The word Akshahini refers to a military phalanx consisting of 21,870 chariots and elephants, 109,350 infantry soldiers, and 65,610 horses. An exact description is given in the Mahabharata, Adi Parva, second chapter as follows. One chariot, one elephant, five infantry soldiers, and three horses are called a pati. So we can get together. One chariot, one elephant, five infantry soldiers and three horses, you have a pati. We don't even have a pati. We don't even have one chariot. We don't even have an elephant. We don't have an infantry soldier. Anyhow, by those who are learned in the science, the wise also know that a sena mukha is three times what a pati is. Now, if you had to maintain one elephant, it's difficult. Elephants eat a whole lot. If you had to have three elephants, we wouldn't have any prasadam. We'd just be feeding it to the elephants. Three sanamukhas are known as one gulma, and three gulmas are called a gana, and three ganas are called a vahini. Three vahinis have been referred to by the learned as a pritana. Three pritanas equal one Samu, and three Samus equal one Anili, Anikini. The wise refers to 10 Anikinis as one Akshohini. The chariots of an Akshohini have been estimated, have been calculated as 21,870 by those who know the science of such calculations. O best of the twice born, and the number of elephants is the same. The number of infantry soldiers is 109,350. The number of horses is 65,610. This is called an Akshahini. And he sent how many Akshahinis against him? Against Parasuram? 17. Yes, so how many soldiers is that? It's over a million. It's a million 1,800,000 soldiers against Parsaram. If you saw 1,800,000 soldiers with all kinds of weapons rushing towards you, what would you do? Stand and fight. After you take care of the 700,000 chariots and elephants, 700,000 elephants and 700,000 chariots that are rushing towards you, then you should stand and fight against the practically 2 million soldiers who are going against you. Or run. Or hide. Probably hiding is probably a better alternative. Lord Parasaram, being expert at killing the military strength of the enemy, worked with the speed of the mind and the wind. Slicing his enemies with his chopper, Parasu, wherever he went, the enemies fell, the legs, arms, and shoulders being severed. The chariot drivers killed, and the carriers, the elephants and horses all annihilated. Severed. Purport. In the beginning, when the army of the enemy was full of fighting soldiers, elephants and horses, Lord Parasaram proceeded into their midst at the speed of mind to kill them. When somewhat tired, he slowed down to the speed of wind and continued to kill the enemies vigorously. The speed of mind is greater than the speed of the wind. By manipulating his axe and arrows, Lord Parasaram cut to pieces the shields, flags, bows, and bodies of Kartavirya Arjuna's soldiers who fell on the battlefield, muddying the ground with their blood. Seeing these reverses, Kartavirya Arjuna, infuriated, rushed to the battlefield. Thus Kartavirya Arjuna, with his 1,000 arms, simultaneously fixed arrows on 500 bows to kill Lord Parasaram. But Parasaram, the best of fighters, released enough arrows with only one bow to cut to pieces immediately all the arrows and bows in the hands of Kartavirya Arjuna. That's quite a trick. If you had 500 arrows coming towards you, one wave of 500 arrows after another, it would be quite a trick to be able to cut them all down. When his arrows were cut to pieces, Kartavirya Arjuna uprooted many trees and hills with his own hands and again rushed strongly towards Lord Parasaram to kill him. But Parasaram then used his axe with great force to cut off Kartavirya Arjuna's arms, just as one might loop off the hoods of a serpent. Maybe we'll incarnate and we can see the fight somewhere. Thereafter, Parasaram cut off, like a mountain peak, the head of Kartavirya Arjuna, who had already lost his arms. When Kartavirya Arjuna's 10,000 sons saw their father killed, they all fled in fear. Then Parasaram, having killed the enemy, released the Kamadhenu, which had undergone great suffering, and brought it back with its calf to his residence, where he gave it to his father, Janmadagni. Parasaram described to his father and brothers his activities in killing Kartavirya Arjuna. Upon hearing these deeds, Janmadagni spoke to his son as follows. O great hero, my dear son Parasaram, you have unnecessarily killed the king, who is supposed to be the embodiment of all the demigods. Thus you have committed a sin. My dear son, we are all Brahmanas and have become worshipful for people in general because of our quality of forgiveness. It is because of this quality that Lord Brahma, the Supreme Spiritual Master of the Universe, has achieved his post. Text number 40. Shemaya rochite lakshmir Brahmi sori yata prabha Shaminam Ashu Bhagavans Tushite Harir Ishvaraha Shamaya. Simply by forgiving. Rochete. Becomes pleasing. Lakshmi. The goddess of fortune. Brahmi. In connection with brahminical qualifications. Sauri, the sun god. Yata, as. Prava, the sunshine. Shaminam, unto the brahmanas who are so forgiving. Ashu, very soon. Bhagavan, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Tushite, becomes pleased. Hari, the Lord. Ishvaraha, the Supreme Controller. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. The duty of a Brahmana is to culture the quality of forgiveness, which is illuminating like the sun. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, is pleased with those who are forgiving. Purport. Different personalities become beautiful by possessing different qualities. Chanaka Pandit says that the cuckoo bird, although very black, is beautiful because of its sweet voice. Similarly, a woman becomes beautiful by her chastity and faithfulness to her husband, and an ugly person becomes beautiful when he becomes a learned scholar. In the same way, Brahmanas, Kshatriyas, Vaishyas, and Shudras become beautiful by their qualities. Brahmanas are beautiful when they are forgiving. Kshatriyas, when they are heroic and never retreat from fighting. Vaishyas, when they enrich cultural activities and protect cows. And Shudras, when they are faithful in the discharge of duties pleasing to their masters. Thus everyone becomes beautiful by his special qualities. And the special quality of the Brahmana, as described here, is forgiveness. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells Arjuna that we're not the body. That's his first instruction. Deno smin yata dehe. Can you repeat it? Can you recite the verse? He mumbled the last part. A self-realized soul. Yes, that's right. Good. Thank you. So this is Krishna's first instruction in Bhagavad Gita, that the body is changing, but the soul is eternal. But then Arjuna may ask Krishna, yes, it's true that we're all eternal, but after all, these are my relatives who I have a very intimate relationship with. It's not going to be very pleasant to kill them. But then Krishna says, yes, it's not going to be pleasant, but Matra Sparsha Sukhandiya Shitoshna Sukhadukada Agama Paino Nityas Timtatiksha Svabharata. O best of the Bharatas, the non-permanent appearance of happiness and distress and the disappearance of in the due cause are like the appearance and the disappearance of winter and summer seasons. They arise from sense perception, O Sina Bharata, and one must learn to tolerate them without being disturbed. So the next thing Krishna says is that we have to learn tolerance. And the most important thing to tolerate is what? Our mind. Yeah, so throughout Bhagavad Gita, in every one of the yoga systems, Krishna emphasizes tolerance of our material desires. That's the difference between an enlightened person and a bewildered person. That, as Krishna says later on, that chapter 2, text number 69, Yanisha Sarabhutanam Tasyam Jagrati Bhutani Yasyam Jagrati Bhutani Sanisha Pashuto Mune. Anyone know what that means? Yes, that's right. Anyhow, close. Ya nisha sarabhutana. What does nisha mean? Yes, it is night. Sarabhutani. Ya nisha sarabhutani. Tasyam jagrati. Jagrati? Yes. Sa nisha sarabhutani. Tasyam jagrati. Bhutani. So from what is night, for all living beings is a time of awakening for the self-controlled. And what is night for the self-controlled is the time of awakening for all sentient beings. So, for a materialist, they believe that the aim of life is to gratify the senses. And therefore, there's no question of tolerance. Because whatever the senses dictate to them, that's what they're fully engaged in. On the other hand, one who learns to control his mind and senses and fix them upon Krishna, Krishna says, is a man of steady intelligence. Tani sarvani samyamya yukta sitamatpra vishayi yasyandriyani tasya pragya patishtita. So the only way we can keep our intelligence, our spiritual intelligence, is to restrain the senses from their objects and try to fix it upon Krishna. Otherwise, as a boat on the water is swept away by a strong wind, even one of the senses in which the mind becomes fixed can carry away a man's intelligence. So that intelligence is the understanding of either Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan. The material nature, when it carries away our spiritual intelligence, then we are absorbed in our false ego and we can't understand either Brahman or Paramatma or Bhagavan. Especially Paramatma and Bhagavan. Because Kamsa, although he's a demon, he was also quite austere, as Hiranyakashipu and others. And therefore they had some idea of Brahman, but they didn't appreciate Paramatma or Bhagavan. In any case, it requires a certain amount of tolerance. Because if we're not the body, we're tolerating. If we know we're not this body, then we're tolerating. The urges of what? Vacha vegam, manasakrodha vegam, jiva vegam, udrapasta vegam, etan vegam, yovishaheta dira, sarvam apimam prativim sashishat. So, without that tolerance of the urges of the senses, then there is no question of any advancement whatsoever in spiritual life. And Brahma, for instance, he sat in meditation for thousands of years of the demigods in order to control his mind and fix it on Krishna. That's Brahma. So we're practicing also doing the same thing, trying to, as Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, he goes through the whole thing, yatra paramite chitam niruda yoga sevaya yatra chaivatmanatmanam pashanatmani tushiti sukamat yandikam yat tad buddhigrayam itindriyam veti yatra nachayvayam sitam chalati tattvataha yam lava chapalam lavam manite nadikam tata yasmin sito nadukena grunapi vichalyate tam vidyav dukasam yogam vi yoga yogasam gitaha. Anyone know what that means? Yeah. That stage of called yoga, perfection, when the mind is completely restrained from all mental activities by the practice of yoga. This is characterized by one's ability to see the self by the pure mind and to relish and rejoice in that self. In that transcendental stage, one is situated in balanced transcendental happiness and enjoys himself through transcendental senses. Established thus, one never departs from the truth, and upon gaining this, one thinks there's no greater gain. This is actual freedom from all the miseries arising from material contact. Then the next verse, Krishna tells us how to attain that. Sanischayena yuktavyam yoga nirvena chetasa sankalpa pravavan karmans tyaktva saramacheshita manaksavendriya gramam vinayamya samantata. Sanishchaya. So one should practice yoga with undeviating determination and faith. Sanishchaya. Nishchaya, determination. Once you engage oneself in the practice of yoga with determination and faith, it might not be deviated from the path. One should abandon without exception all material desires born of mental speculation, and thus control all the senses and all sides by the mind. So, require, if we have detachment that's achieved in our yoga system, if we're thinking about Krishna. In other words, unless we get the higher taste of thinking about Krishna or seeing things in relationship to Krishna, then if we're in a material conception of life, then we're much more likely to be carried away by the impulses arising from the senses and the mind. So we're trying to acquire at least a vision to see things in Krishna consciousness. And then we can tolerate whatever senses, whatever urges of the senses are, because we can see that actually, we can see that we're not the body, we're not the mind. Following the senses will lead to difficulty, the dictation of the senses. So if one has that vision, then one can control. But if one is completely identified with one's false ego and believes that one is the mind and is unmindful, unaware, or doesn't care about the consequences of following the dictation of the senses, then one gets carried away by the urges of the mind and the senses. And pranashati, there will be difficulty. Therefore, in every practice, the Bhagavad Gita is all about tolerance. Seeing things properly so we can learn how to tolerate. If we don't see things properly, we probably won't tolerate either. Seeing things in relationship to Krishna, for instance, if you go into a store, a candy store, say, and you like candy, and you don't see anyone in the store, somehow or another you got in there, the proprietor of the store walked out, you don't see the proprietor, and you start thinking, well, there's no one here, maybe no one owns the store, so let me just start eating the candy, because there's no proprietor, I assume proprietorship. But when the owner walks in, and you see the proprietor is there, then you smile and you run out of the store. Similarly, we've come to the material world, we don't see the proprietor, and we're trying to eat all the candy we can here. But when we become aware that there's a proprietor and he has a police force behind him, then we stop our thievery and we try to we ask for forgiveness for the proprietor for stealing his candy, and therefore we try to become a good customer. We may even have to pay for the candy that we stole. So in the same way, we come to the material world, our senses are dictating to steal everything we can from Krishna. But when we accept that Krishna is the owner of the material world, then we try to make amends for it and utilize things in Krishna's service. So that's when we utilize things in Krishna's service and we come under Krishna's, we remember Krishna. Because if we do it to please Krishna, then Krishna will reveal himself, will remember him spontaneously. And the result is that in that higher experience of Krishna, of association with Krishna, the urges of the senses become purified and the tendency to try to steal from Krishna goes down. So the quality of forgiveness of here is part of that shema, is part of that quality of tolerance. Generally speaking, we're envious of people. Either we want what they have, or we want to make sure people don't get get any more than I have. Therefore, although tolerance and forgiveness seem a little bit different, but actually, according to Bhagavad Gita, Brahma Bhuta Prasanatma Nishoshiti Nakangshiti Samak Sarveshu Bhuteshu Mad Bhaktim Lavate Param. that one can only become joyful if one gives up hankering and lamentation. So what is the hankering and lamentation? It's been explained, we're hankering to become God, and we're angry that we can't become God. So we're become God in relation to others, so we're hankering to become the Supreme in relation to others. And if they don't act as if we're their controller and their enjoyer, we become angry and frustrated, and we become revengeful sometimes against others who don't fulfill our desire to become the Supreme. So that's hankering, and then we lament after we lament the fact that although I try to lord it over others, I was unsuccessful. So then we lament. But if we tolerate, then we can forgive. And if we don't tolerate, then it's impossible to forgive. So they go together, tolerance and forgiveness. If we were tolerant, just like Vashishtha Muni, he had 100 sons and he got into a quarrel with Vishvamrita Muni. So Vishvamrita Muni killed his 100 sons, which would be quite disturbing for most people. You only have 100 sons and someone kills them all. But Vishishtha Muni tolerated. So that's the power of the Brahmins, to tolerate. Sometimes we find in the Srimad Bhagavatam, sometimes the Brahmins don't tolerate, and it's very difficult for everyone. Just like when King Nriga gave, he had millions of cows he gave in charity. When he gave one cow in charity to one Brahmin, and the Brahmin wandered back into his herd and he gave it to another Brahmin, the two Brahmins began to argue over who that cow belonged to. So King Nriga told the Brahmins that I'll give you 100,000 cows in exchange for that one cow. Don't curse me for so-called taking the property of a Brahmin. But they didn't listen to him. They both went away. They didn't accept 100,000 cows. And they didn't even take the one cow, they just left and they cursed the king. So King Nriga became a lizard in his next lifetime. That's what happens when you have a Brahmin or Brahmins who don't tolerate, you can get into a lot of trouble. So Brahminical prowess also is supposed to come with tolerance. Like Sringhi, who cursed Maharaj Parikshit, was intolerant of the fact that Maharaj Parikshit simply put a garland over his father's, a snake over his father's neck. So he cursed the king to die. So that's certainly lack of tolerance. Just like here, Kartavirya Arjuna stole a Kamaduk cow, which is quite valuable, but you wouldn't expect that someone would go along and kill a few million soldiers and then cut off the head of the king. Especially if they're a Brahmin. Now if they're a Kshatriya, that's normal for a Kshatriya, fighting spirit, but Parasurama was supposed to be a Brahmin. But actually he was transcendental as an incarnation of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And therefore he could display although he was born in a Brahmin family, he could display the characteristics of a Kshatriya, because that's why he incarnated. The Supreme Personality of God has all qualities, and he displays them appropriately, according to his desire for his pastime. So Parasuram is in astrology. Who's Parasuram in astrology? Which planet? What's that? Venus, yes. So Venus, the goddess of love. Such as love in the material world. One day you're, as it says, courting, what began with courting. You know what courting means in English? You know what courting means? Courting. When a man and woman are courting each other. What usually courting means that, like, they have an engagement, and getting to know each other. Courting. from English. What's that? Yes, when you're nice. And the woman is usually nice to the man too. That's called courting. What usually begins with courting winds up in court. So that's the nature of Venus. That's the nature of love in the material world. That sometimes it's very sweet. It's like bubble gum. You know, chewing gum. When you start chewing on the gum, that there's some sugar in the gum, and therefore it tastes sweet. But when you keep on chewing and chewing and chewing, there'll be a time when all of the sugar will be out of the gum, and it's not sweet anymore. And therefore, you many times people just either put it on their bedpost, hopefully the next day it'll get sweet again, or they spit it out. It's called chewing the chewed. In any case, one has to learn to tolerate. Parasuram was an incarnation of a Brahman, because Venus is actually a Brahman in astrology. But the Venus can have a very fierce side to it also. When the sweetness is out, it can become very sweet, very fierce, as Parasuram was. In any case, Venus is the Brahminical planet for material happiness, as Jupiter is the planet for spiritual happiness, or philosophical higher happiness. So one has to try to avoid trying to find happiness in the material world, because Venus can go through great austerity in order to finally get material happiness. Brahmins also go through austerity, but their aim is some kind of material happiness. On the other hand, we should go through our austerity to have spiritual happiness rather than just mundane happiness. Nanyan deho deha bhajam liroke kastan kaman arhate vidbhujam ye tapo divyam putrika yena sadvam shudyat tasmai pramasokim tunadam. Maharishi Shabdev advises his 100 sons, don't live life like a hog and dog that are simply eating stool. Instead, you should perform divine austerity by which you can get eternal happiness, unlimited happiness that goes on forever. So that's why we're tolerating. Everyone has to tolerate. Hiranyakashipu tolerated standing on the tip of his toes for 100 years of the demigods, 120 years of the demigods, to become immortal. But obviously it was an impossible desire, in spite of all his austerity. But we're also going through austerity. To sit in this class is an austerity. But we're going through it to get eternal life, unlimited, happy, with unlimited happiness. That's our aim. So we have to tolerate our minds, tolerate our bodies, telling us we want to go to sleep or whatever. Tolerate, and then we'll get, gradually Krishna will help us achieve by that tolerance. And we have to forgive the speaker. He said something we didn't like. So that with that tolerance and forgiveness, we can achieve Krishna consciousness. So I'll stop there. Thank you. Any questions?
I was thinking, actually this Brahmana's curses are not so bad after all, because in these two examples you gave us about Sringi cursing the king, actually went back to Krishna. And in the other example, also King Bhrigu was actually in his life as lizard, he was saved from the that well by Krishna's hand. Krishna came personally to save him. After all, it's not so bad.
Sometimes, these are devotees. Or at least Pariksha Maharaj was a great devotee. That was Krishna's arrangement. King Bhrigu was a very pious person who was also a devotee. But just ordinary people getting cursed by a Brahman may not be very... Of course, nothing happens by accident, and therefore, ultimately, everything is to teach her something. But it may not be as pleasant as King Nariga. Krishna may not come and pick us out of the well. We wind up as a lizard on the bottom of a well. Or if we're cursed to die in 7 days, we may not hear the Bhagavatam. from Shukadeva Goswami. But anyhow, everything Krishna does is good, so even if we get cursed, then the result will not be bad. Final result. We'll learn something. Anything else?
Yes. Hare Krishna. Yes, thank you for lecture. I have a just question regarding to tolerance in also our society, because we can see that we have such a elaborate and philosophy and fine philosophy that everything is very nice said, but like in the practice, we see in our community a lot of duplicity.
Not everyone sees all this duplicity. It depends on your special vision that you have.
But like if you are looking for about the facts, then you can see the duplicity and.
Well, if you're looking for the facts, if you're looking for your facts, just like the bumblebee goes towards the honey, and the fly goes towards the stool. So if you're looking for a duplicity, you'll find it wherever you think you find it.
Yes. One of the things is like cleanliness. They say that it's next to the godliness. And what is my experience is once you start to put a point out of the cleanliness, that nothing happens. So, but if you say a little bit stronger, then there is no understanding. How to understand this? That still we are practicing.
Well, anyhow, you should practice.
Yes.
Yeah, you should practice. First of all, you should purify your mind so you don't become offensive towards the devotees. That's the first cleanliness you should practice.
Yes.
And if you don't practice that cleanliness, then all your other cleanliness is just a waste of time.
So usually the problem is only in the person who exposed this.
That's
and
right.
Like everybody usually, is in
that's,
the, like
that's right. The main problem is with the person who becomes angry, envious when he sees others are not following his dictation. That's his problem.
Yeah.
As far as the standard of cleanliness for others, it's for their benefit. It's for their advancement. But if we're envious of others, that's our offensive nature. That's uncleanliness. And therefore, we'll get the greatest reaction.
Yes. So we should see everything like that it's normal.
You should see with intelligence. You should see the full picture, not your own mental concoction of things. You should learn how to see things through the spiritual vision. Then you'll be able to adjust things accordingly. You won't become envious of others.
Yes. Thank you.
Anything else? Hala, Grantarashi Madhvagavatam Kijai.